It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, how the state is looking to address chronic problems at the Riverview Psychiatric Hospital in Augusta. And the Skowhegan Area Public Schools will continue to call their sports teams Indians. We'll have those stories in a moment, but first, this national and world news from NPR. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. The board that oversees operations at Maine's 15 county jails is being targeted by Republican Governor Paula Page and a legislative committee. A.J. Higgins reports.
The corrections board has not functioned since January when the governor announced he would not fill vacancies on the panel. Now LePage has zeroed out the board's operating budget in a new state budget revision. Meanwhile, the legislature's Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee has voted 6-4 in favor of eliminating the board and returning control of the jails to the counties. Maine Sheriff's Association President Joel Mary says the $14 million in state funding contained in the measure won't cover all of the jail's costs.
In this particular bill, the money that's provided is probably not enough to completely close the structural gap that's been created. It's going to have a different implication for each and every county.
If approved, final funding for the proposal will be determined by the legislature's Appropriations Committee. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
The state's spring turkey hunting season opened on Monday, and inland fisheries and wildlife biologist Brad Allen says so far the season's going pretty well. Allen says he thinks overall the season will see a modest harvest. He says several factors have contributed to a reduction in the turkey population, including the harsh winter, which he says reduced the number of birds 10-15% from the fall.
2 or 3 years ago, some of our birds come out with a virus that compromised the health of another small percentage of the population, and the last 2 or 3 springs in my memory have been less than spectacular for turkey production.
Not long ago, there were no wild turkeys in Maine. They were reintroduced in the 70s and are now a familiar sight in all 16 counties. This year, for the first time since reintroduction, the turkey hunt has been extended to northern Maine. Allen says given the newness of the hunt in the north, additional restrictions are in place there to ensure hunter safety and landowner rights. The spring turkey season runs through the first week of June. In weather tonight, some clouds and a coastal fog with lows in the high 30s to low 40s. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy with a morning fog statewide, a few late showers in the north. Highs in the mid-60s to low 70s, cooler along the coast, especially east of Portland. And on Sunday, muggy with morning fog and showers, a chance of thunder in the interior with highs in the mid-60s to mid-70s north to south, cooler along the coast. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Governor Paula Page is proposing a two-part plan to address chronic problems at the Riverview Psychiatric Hospital in Augusta. The administration has outlined part of the proposal to lawmakers, and more is due out soon. Mal Leary has details.
Since a court-ordered agreement back in 1990, Maine has been wrestling with how to provide mental health services to those most in need. In his budget change package this week, Governor LePage is proposing just over $3 million a year to be allocated for the operation of a new facility with 14 new beds aimed at a specific group of patients. Dr. Brendan Kirby is clinical director at Riverview.
What these 2 7-bed secure facilities would provide would be the ability for those individuals to move from the hospital setting when their clinical needs no longer require a hospital level of care.
That, he says, will allow the hospital to match the level of care and security needs for the individual patients that are still under court order to be confined at the facility. Alec Porteous, Deputy Commissioner of Finance at DHHS, says the move is a response to concerns of the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, that some patients are being kept in the full hospital setting after it's no longer needed.
Can't release them into the community yet by court order, so we're stuck with no place to house these individuals and obviously under pressure from regulators to move them out of Riverview, certainly from CMS, and that's what we're trying to do by solving this problem.
But members of the legislature's Appropriations Committee and the Health and Human Services Committee say they want more details about the plan and how it fits into the overall strategy at Riverview. Lewiston Democratic Representative Piggy Rotundo, who co-chairs the Appropriations Committee, pressed Porteous for information.
It is frustrating when it comes in dribs and drabs.
Sure, and I would defer to Commissioner Mayhew, to Jay Harper, to Ricker Hamilton. I hate to disagree, but I feel like we've provided, the characterization of dribs and drabs, I just don't think is fair. And I think we've done our best to give a broad outline of what we want to do at Riverview.
In an interview, Jay Harper, the superintendent of Riverview, says the proposal before lawmakers is only part of the strategy for getting federal regulators to recertify the hospital. He says the plan is to contract for services, not create a new state facility. And he says there will be a second proposal to address another population that federal regulators say is not being properly served.
So we're not really structured for the higher risk, very assaultive, aggressive, and behaviorally oriented population. That's caused us our problems, as you know, for the last year and a half.
Harper says as a result, some patients that should be in a secure hospital program are spending too much time in local hospital emergency rooms. He says the state is looking at a private provider for that facility as well.
We have checked the marketplace, and there are some people that seem to think that they might be able to be in the business to do that.
He's not ready to say exactly what the department will be proposing and what it will cost, but Harper assures that he will be going before lawmakers in the next week or so to offer more information on both parts of the plan. Rotondo says he should be prepared to answer a lot of questions. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
Skowhegan area schools won't be forced to drop the nickname Indians for their sports teams. In a close decision late yesterday, the school board at SAD 54 voted to keep the name over the objections of Maine's four tribes, which argue the term is racially insensitive and hurtful to Native Americans. Skowhegan schools are the only ones in the state that still use such a nickname, which defenders say is not meant to be racist and is simply a part of the town's heritage and identity. Jay Field reports.
On Thursday night, 9 members of the school board voted to drop the name. 11, including Valerie Columba, voted to keep it. Here's Columba explaining her vote to the board in a video shot by WMTW News 8.
I have gotten more phone calls from student athletes begging me to keep the name. As a former student athlete and a former graduate, I am a Skowhegan Indian.
I'm very disappointed.
Molly and Smith, a member of the Penobscot Nation, spoke at a district forum several weeks ago. At the session, Smith and other members of Maine's four tribes told personal stories of the misunderstanding and hurt they've experienced when confronted with nicknames like Indians.
It's unfortunate that the school board allowed the people of the town to intimidate them and bully them into making this decision. It's definitely not in the best interest of their children.
In the weeks leading up to the vote, school board members were inundated with email and other messages from friends and neighbors weighing in on the issue. At Thursday night's meeting, one board member who voted to dump the nickname told the Portland Press-Herald that she'd gotten a lot of nasty emails from people. Tim Downing, the board's vice chair, has also heard from a lot of people.
Oh, gosh. Yes, hundreds.
But Downing, who also voted to drop the nickname, says 99% of the emails he received were civil and more or less equally split between those on both sides of the debate.
People had done the homework on this and knew where they wanted to come down and were trying to help us through the process, which was appreciated.
Skowhegan schools are now the last in the state that use a nickname that Native American tribes find offensive. Disagreement over the use of the term Indians first surfaced in the town as early as 1999, when the American Indian Movement sent a letter of protest to the local district. The school board formally rejected a push to drop the name 2 years later. Then, in February of this year, the Bangor chapter of the NAACP weighed in, demanding that the district come up with a different nickname and mascot.
When you look at the vote, obviously, had it flip-flop, 11 in favor of change would have been a little sweeter.
But Barry Dana says the tribes still accomplished a lot by pushing the issue and demanding to be heard. Dana is a former tribal chief of the Penobscot Nation.
To come into a situation totally without allies and then in such a short amount of time have so many people in town or, you know, in the district come to our support, and then to finally, you know, have 9 out of 20 people vote for change, I thought was remarkable.
But for Molly and Smith, who is Dana's daughter, the outcome stings. She says she'd like to see the tribes put pressure on the Maine Principals Association to get other schools to refuse to play Skowhegan in sports unless the district drops the Indians' nickname. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And thanks to WMTW for its help on this story. Finally today, hundreds of students across the state will soon be embarking on life after school, armed with college degrees intended to help open doors to careers and gainful employment. But with a growing push to develop more manufacturing and tech careers and a nationwide focus on science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, what's in store for the state's newest liberal arts majors at a time when those fields of study have become the butt of political jokes and otherwise come under fire? Jennifer Mitchell stalked with some Maine seniors seeking a life in the humanities to learn more about their plans and their prospects.
It's spring on the University of Maine at Orono campus. Students are cleaning up the greens, packing up boxes, and preparing to depart for the summer. More than 1,600 of them won't be coming back. And for those leaving the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, the future may seem a bit less defined than for someone who is trained to be a research technician or a biochemist.
I'm a philosophy and history double major.
I'm an English and anthropology double major with a minor in folklore.
I am a studio art major with a sculpture concentration.
I'm a history major with a political science minor.
And I am a theater and history double major.
Philosophy, history, languages, art, music, and theater. These students are among hundreds who will be graduating with those kinds of degrees across the state. One of them is Taylor Cunningham, an English and anthropology major with a love for stories and folklore. She thinks there will always be a place in the world for the humanities and jobs for people like her.
I think in any discipline, you need creativity. You need critical thinking. And if you don't have that, then there's something very severely lacking. And so I think I have a lot to give in that way. Yeah.
And there are many who agree, including CNN's Fareed Zakaria, who has just released a book called In Defense of a Liberal Education. In it, Zakaria makes the case that America's success was built on liberal arts and a desire for knowledge rather than a need to fill jobs. But liberal arts majors have been the butt of jokes for years, with punchlines usually something to the effect of, you want fries with that. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory has said that tax dollars should not support university programs such as gender studies or African languages. Florida Governor Rick Scott posed the question of whether his state really needed more anthropology. And then there's the poster child for unemployability, the art history major.
Folks can make a lot more potentially with skilled manufacturing or the trades than they might with an art history degree.
Yes, President Obama reintroduced that into public discourse, for which I don't thank him.
That's Emily Haddad, Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. She says these jokes about the impracticality and perhaps even waning legitimacy of a liberal arts degree have endured for a long time. But according to an American Council of Colleges and Universities study last year, there's no evidence that those degrees are employment killers. On the contrary.
People who had graduated with liberal arts degrees during their peak earning period, so this is really in their late 50s when you would expect folks to have the highest possible salary of their lives, that those who had graduated with liberal arts degrees actually earned on average $2,000 a year more than people who had graduated with professional and pre-professional degrees.
And according to the same study, liberal arts grads are not disproportionately represented among the ranks of the unemployed. According to Forbes magazine, about a third of all Fortune 500 company CEOs have liberal arts degrees. But there are other studies, such as one conducted by Georgetown University last year, that found that some with bachelor's degrees in STEM-related fields were earning more than those with a liberal arts PhD. The reason is supply and demand. A documented skills gap in Maine and elsewhere means that jobs are going vacant because not enough students have the education to fill those positions. So Are today's students aware of this? And why would someone choose a career in, say, philosophy when the economy clearly demands more techies? Karen Coyle was leaning toward a career in the sciences until he fell in love with studying the more abstract questions of life.
Life is about taking risks at times. And then you tell someone, I'd like to go and study philosophy. And they say, oh, but you are really good at math and science. You should continue to do those. And well, it's a risk that I'm willing to take because it's something that I find fulfilling.
Not a single student with whom we spoke had firm career plans or a job offer, but none expressed any fear over their prospects for employment. Most had parents who were supportive of their plans, and a potentially modest salary or a lack of job security didn't seem to be factors. All of those concrete considerations were soundly trumped by a desire to follow a path of passion. In short, to do what makes them happy. Now, whether that's youth or wisdom talking remains to be seen. For MPBN News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
It's 12 minutes before 6 o'clock. Time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
This pattern shift represents quite a change for most, with the cool air dominating. Now, a few slivers of moonlight will appear from Presque Isle North, while low clouds sweep in from the ocean and cover much of the state by dawn with coastal fog late, upper 30s to low 40s. Tomorrow, there will be a few glimpses of sunshine enjoyed across western Maine once the morning fog vaporizes. Otherwise, cloudy all day, and a few showers will appear along the Quebec border late. Mid-60s to low 70s north to south, cooler along the coast, especially east of the Kennebec. Mother's Day, morning fog statewide. The rest of the state, considerable cloudiness, with afternoon showers and possibly some thunder inland throughout the interior. Mid-60s north to mid-70s south, cooler along the coast. Early next week will be showery. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, A.J. Higgins, and Barbara Caridi. I'm Nora Flaherty.